Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:08 p.m. the Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 17th. I thought we'd kick off with the yield curve spread, because it's been going sideways for most of the last 6 months, and that's unusual. It's the kind of thing that should be making or should be contributing to greater debate, but there is very little debate about the hiatus that we've seen in terms of the uptrend. Because generally speaking, after a significant inversion of the yield curve, then we would see a significant rise in the spread. Now, on this occasion, there are mitigating factors. For example, we have the fact that interest rates are already very low, so we don't have the ability to have a big divergence between the long and short ends of the curves without either short-term interest rates going negative and then significantly negative, or long bond yields rising significantly. So we're still in this hiatus, but one thing that is also worth considering is that it's usually not simply when we get an inverted yield curve. The inverted yield curve is a lead indicator for future problems. And then it can be anything from 6 to 18 months out. So often prices will rally after the inverted yield curve. It's in fact usually when the yield curve starts to surge higher and is surging through the 50 basis point level and then onwards that we get the biggest trouble occurring in stock markets. And that has not happened. So we have certainly had a significant pullback back in February and March. We've also had an equally impressive rebound, and now we're seeing some consolidation of that rebound. The S&P 500 was down another percent in here today. It is now right in the region of the 50-day moving average, where it at least steadied in here today. Now, if it were to rebound tomorrow, then this is still a momentum trend that is reasonably consistent. If, on the other hand, it fails, well, then that is holding out the prospect of a full reversion back down towards the mean and potentially a test of the 3,000 level, which would be an additional 10% decline from current levels. When we then think about the NASDAQ, it's a very similar condition, although it has gone up more. It is now below its 50-day moving average and testing the psychological 11,000 level, which also represents the upper side of the most recent trading range. So this is also a natural area where we might anticipate support. Of course, it could also pull back by an extra 1,000 points, test the previous peak from back in February, and the region of the trend mean, so there is an additional 10% risk in the market if it fails to hold this 11,000 level. And I think that that is the conclusion many investors have reached, that we're at an important juncture. On every other occasion over the course of the last 6 months, the market has bounced from the region of the 50-day moving average, and that is quite common in big momentum moves. We saw a very similar condition in 2017 when the market took off right after the presidential election and kept rallying all the way through until January of 2018. So it was a very persistent and volatility-free 15-month advance. Now what we're seeing is we've had a very significant rebound from the region of the lows in March, and that has been predicated on the willingness of the Federal Reserve to pull out all the stops and to print money in a number of different ways, whether that has been to provide money to the repo market, money to the high-yield bond market, the corporate bond markets, whether it is directly giving money to the banks. And then, of course, you have the fiscal element of it as well, which has just simply given money directly to unemployed people. And then they've also had the benefit of earning more from unemployment benefits than they would have had from working. So all of that has helped to paper over a lot of cracks. But what we are now starting to see, and the reason that we've had this period of consolidation, are, I think, twofold. The first is there are some questions about the willingness of the monetary and fiscal authorities to continue to provide that extraordinary liquidity. The size of the Fed's balance sheet has effectively gone nowhere since May, and nothing changed there over the last few days, when we had the Federal Reserve speaking yesterday, talking about the fact that they're not going to potentially raise interest rates for years. I saw one estimate pointing towards 2023 before they raise interest rates. So we're going to be in a very low interest rate environment and high liquidity environment for the foreseeable future. 10-year bond yields are still contained, but they're not moving. In fact, the volatility in the government bond market has contracted significantly over the course of just the last while. When we then think about the MOVE index, it's at new lows. So volatility in government bonds is now at new all-time lows. And that's rather extraordinary, that we have all of these questions about the sustainability of debt, and yet the volatility in the market is very low, because investors are willing to bet that the Federal Reserve is going to do whatever is necessary. It's just that with stock markets not that far off their highs, and with asset prices doing better, and economies starting to recover, they don't feel like it's urgent. Therefore, investors need to ask the question, what would make it urgent? Well, one bet would be the presidential election in the USA. And there are obviously a number of potential problems. The first is with the prevalence of mail-in voting and the difficulty in counting all those votes, but more importantly, even verifying that those votes are coming from real people. So that's obviously an additional question. But there's the potential that we're going to have a much more exaggerated rerun of what happened in 2000. That election came down to the questions of hanging chads, and it was really only a few hundred people decided the entire presidential election. We're likely to have legal challenges to results all over the country in November, December, and potentially all the way through until the first quarter of 2021. And it does hold out the prospect of a great deal of uncertainty. So that could potentially then represent a catalyst for the Federal Reserve to become much more active. One thing I did find quite interesting again in here today was that the volatility on the stock market also encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean and pulled back. It does suggest that we're going to see an additional pop on the upside tomorrow, and that I think is one of the reasons why the 200-day moving average is probably unlikely to be tested in the short term, but rather that the 50-day is a more relevant touchstone for investor psychology in the short term. Then we did see today that the dollar was a little bit firmer in early trading, but then as volatility started to come down, it reversed those declines. And this is one of the most important factors, that the dollar is overextended relative to the trend mean, but there are significant bearish characteristics that are influencing the outlook for the dollar. One thing that I think is particularly interesting is that a number of commodity-related currencies are breaking their trends against the dollar. So, for example, the South African rand has now sustained a move back above the trend mean, and it's held its outperformance now for 6 months. There are there was news over the last few days that South Africa has pretty much ended its assistance. It's no longer going to cut interest rates. They are talking about opening up borders because they want to try and rescue the tourist market, and this is coming into their summer season. And obviously that is a concession to the realpolitik of trying to rescue the economy while also trying to curtail the spread of the virus. But there is a clear trend here of strengthening that we're seeing coming through in commodity related currencies. So with interest rates likely to stay low for a prolonged period of time, then that is going to help to reflate the global economy. And we're also starting to see that industrials are starting to do better. So for example, GE is still trading right in the region of the lows from all the way back in 2008. And it has put in an upward dynamic this week because they are anticipating positive cash flows in the second half. When we think about 3M, it's another company that has been trending lower now for a prolonged period, but it's in the process now of breaking a lengthy progression of lower rally highs. The Chemours company has also now broken its downtrend. So we're starting to see that industrial companies are starting to do better. Now, there are clear laggards, and certainly Rolls-Royce is one of those. They are particularly exposed to the airline sector, and there are dilutive actions going on where they're going to going to issue more debt and more equity. So it did take an additional leg lower over the last couple of weeks. But nonetheless, with the commonality we're seeing in the industrial sector, then there is the potential that it will play catch up eventually, but it's going to have to get through the dilutive event first. So we're seeing commodity prices doing better overall, although industrial resources prices were somewhat weaker in isolated cases in here today. The continuous commodity index was in positive territory, and it is firming from the 400 level. The oil price has also additionally rallied again in here today, so it is certainly confirming support in the region of that $40 area, and that is certainly encouraging. But I think energy investors have been so chastened by the underperformance that we've seen in some of the really large companies and the pressure that has come to bear on dividends, that is all still taking a toll on some of the bigger companies. Of course, they're also responding to the threat of outright taxation, whether that is going to be in terms of a much more aggressive carbon trading environment, or the clear need of governments to tax, and then the potential that transportation fuels are going to be viewed as sin taxes and attract the same kinds of punitive taxation that cigarettes do. That's being priced into the shares of some of the big energy producers. But as oil prices improve, then eventually we're going to get to a point where the value and the risk reward will come back into favor for the energy sector. So it is certainly something to pay attention to, and not least as some of these shares come back down and into the region of the lows put in back in March. So we are getting into an interesting potential area in the just the conventional energy sector. Meanwhile, the renewables have been certainly outperforming for exactly the same reason, just in reverse. They're likely to benefit enormously from the imposition of carbon trading and the upward pressure that is likely to be put on the price of any kind of use for fossil fuels. And of course, that is also going to be a topic of conversation and a big potential trend depending on the outcome of the US presidential election. Well, when we look at the performance of international markets, they were pretty much all in negative territory in here today. The ASX 200 in Australia was down over 1%, and it's still ranging below its trend mean. When we then think about the trend that we have in the UK, the FTSE 100 has still got the succession of lower rally highs, and it's still encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean, although it was off its lows in here today. When we then think about Europe, there are a number of countries where the number of coronavirus cases continue to rise, but it's very arguable whether we're in fact going to have another or additional strict lockdown. The number of deaths and hospitalizations are likely to be contained because the majority of people contracting the disease are younger and tend to be less equally affected, are less affected than older people. The NASDAQ Biotech Index recouped most of its decline in here today, but the most important thing it's done has been to find support in the region of the trend mean and then rally enough to break the short-term sequence of lower rally highs. This continues to look like a first step above the base, and it is likely to be a sector that continues to benefit for years to come. When we then think about some of the emerging markets like India, well, it was in negative territory today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. And the other point, of course, is that the rupee has been strengthening, and it's been rallying now since April, and it's potentially now finding support in the region of the trend mean. I did talk yesterday about the Japanese yen, and it was additionally firm in here today. So the big question now is, with the continued downward pressure on the US dollar and the resumption of performance in Asian currencies in particular, are there central banks going to actively engage in trying to devalue their currencies, or are they going to be willing to allow the dollar to depreciate against them? Because if the dollar continues to deteriorate, then that is likely to be a significant arbiter in terms of the decision of international investors to engage aggressively again in emerging markets. The continued willingness of the Chinese to allow the renminbi to appreciate is a significant factor there. And while it was in negative territory in here today, it was again well off its lows. And that initial dollar strength and subsequent reversal also influenced the gold price in here. We do have something of a triangular pattern forming. There has been a succession of lower rally highs since the peak in August, but we still have this sequence of higher reaction lows also within the range. So generally, when we get these triangular patterns, a break in one direction or another can be sustained. And we also know where the stops are. There are certainly stops going to be imposed around 1900, and then there will also be short stops somewhere around 1975. So when the price moves through those levels, then it's likely to start to pick up pace. And we may not yet see a pullback towards the 200-day moving average. I've certainly been positioned thinking that that was a likely course of action, but gold is another high momentum instrument that continues to find support in the region of the 50-day moving average. Then Bitcoin is also rather interesting in here. It has been rebounding from the 10,000 level, and 10,000 had been a really quite relevant area of resistance all the way between the end of 2019 and at the breakout in July. So this is also demonstrating support around this area. Then the Ethereum market has been much more well supported following the big move that we saw on the breakout from March. And it has also demonstrated support in the region of the upper side of its base formation. So there is also potential here that we are going to see additional interest from investors coming through in the cryptocurrency markets. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.